versus Pierce County Sheriff's Department. Why don't we let folks clear before we start?
Certainly. Morning, may it please the court. My name is Lincoln Beauregard, along with Ken Thielander. I represent the appellants in this case.
Do you want to reserve any time for rebuttal?
I'd like to reserve 6 minutes, Your Honor. I know the court's already familiar with the facts of this case, so I won't go through them all. Just like to highlight what this case is about. My client, presently little girls, teenage girls at this point, were molested by their grandfather over an extended period of time because Pierce County Sheriff's Department failed to properly investigate sustainable allegations of sexual abuse against these young ladies' mother and sister. Her sister, Teresa Johnson and Veronica Johnson. The case is actually very, very straightforward and much more straightforward than Pierce County would have it be presented in their briefing. Our primary source of law with regard to the issue of duty is the Lewis opinion. The Lewis opinion was authored by this court, Division I. Judge Applewick, you were concurring in that opinion, and it held that a law enforcement agency like Pierce County has a duty to reasonably investigate allegations of abuse to make sure that little girls don't get molested. Pretty straightforward. On the issue of causation, I think that one of the best pieces of authority we can look at that wasn't discussed at length in the briefing but was another opinion from Division I, the Chenal case. Judge Applewick concurred in that opinion as well. In Chenal, in that concurring opinion, Judge Applewick concurred with the conclusion that this: when a social worker does a bad investigation, provides bad information to the people that are going to make decisions where those little kids are going to go, when that occurs, the social worker can be held liable under 2644.
The children or any children?
I'd submit that the question, Your Honor, is answered this way: all children that are at risk. And how do I get there? Because the legislature enacted 2644 and couldn't have been more clear. It couldn't have been more clear to say that we're trying to protect all children. We don't want to leave one children in a home with a child molester and just pull the other one out. That circumstance would never occur. There's a component of 2644, if you're looking for evidence of the legislative intent, that just beyond the statement of intent that's actually put into the Declaration of Purpose. We cited for it under 2644.030 that talks about the duty to report and the duty to take action when you identify there is children at risk. That verbiage is actually in the statutory scheme. So when the legislature enacts statutes that say that mandated reporters and investigators have a duty to take action when you recognize children are at risk, it doesn't mean what Pierce County suggests, that you have to get a report about a particular kids getting molested, and you only owe that kid a duty. That can't be right. There's no law to support that suggestion. Another case on that similar principle that I'd like to make reference to is Judge Applewick concurred in that opinion, is the NK opinion. That's the kid with the Boy Scouts. And the guy comes from out of town and he starts molesting people and they didn't have specific notice. And this court held that on principles of foreseeability, that was a very viable claim. Well, when we talk about foreseeability, just like in the NK opinion, the duty should be limited by foreseeability. So the question here is, could a jury find it was foreseeable for the Pierce County investigator who left a business card instead of doing a right investigation, should have been foreseeable that other children could have been molested? I'll submit to you as an evidentiary question, and I'm a trial lawyer and an appellate lawyer, that's a case where you win 99 times out of 100 on this evidence. I'll reserve the rest of my time. Thank you.
Thank you. You'll have 6 minutes for rebuttal.
Good May it please the Court, my name is Dan Hamilton. I represent Pierce County in this case. Your Honor, this case is about an unprecedented claim that an allegedly incomplete police investigation of a child abuse in 1996, at a time long before these plaintiff's children existed, made police liable when that child grew up, had children, those children were removed from her by the state, and then they're abused a decade later in 2007. Plaintiff's suit was properly dismissed because the essential elements of duty and proximate cause are absent as a matter of law.
What if instead the sheriff's deputy had made an investigation and he concluded abuse had occurred, but that information just never got communicated back to the agency that had referred the matter to him? Would your argument be the same?
It would be the same. I'd have more arguments to make, but yes, the argument would be the same, Your Honor.
So even if the sheriff's deputy found that this fellow was an abuser and the evidence was DSHS would never place children with someone found to be an abuser, it still matters that the children who ended up being abused by the known abuser had been born and identified.
According to the overwhelming case law, Your Honor, it does matter whether these children are in existence or not. Whether, you know, plaintiff's counsel argues that from the language, ignoring the rest of the case law and the rest of the statutory language, that all it has to be is at risk. It's true that if an investigation, a report comes in about a particular child, and an investigation shows, well, that someone else is at risk in that household, then they have information from that investigation that they then come within the class of people protected. But where someone doesn't exist, is not in that household, is not indicated to be at risk from that investigation or report, the case law, Your Honor, is pretty clear.
Is it unreasonable to assume that an incest abuser would be a risk to his grandchildren?
No, it's not at all. But the question isn't whether someone is a risk. That doesn't create a duty, Your Honor. This court has said, in fact, this court in Deaver pointed out that in the common law context, refused to recognize, and the state refuses to recognize, a negligent investigation type of cause of action because, as this court said, it impairs vigorous prosecution and have a chilling effect upon law enforcement, in quote, even where there's a risk.
Well, we're not looking at the definition of the tort here. We're looking at your foreseeability argument.
Okay. Well, foreseeability doesn't create a cause of action either, Your Honor.
No, but that it's a piece of the legal analysis at issue.
It is.
And the question is, once someone is an incestuous pedophile, is it foreseeable that if you place another infant with a blood relationship with that person who and the child is a child being placed, is it foreseeable that their abuse would occur?
Well, again, Your Honor, foreseeability does not create a duty. It does, however, as the court has...
Would you agree it's not unforeseeable that that child would be at risk?
I believe as a matter of law it's unforeseeable, yes. As a matter of law, it is unforeseeable that that child would be at risk because that child doesn't exist at the time this happens. Put someone
let's
liability...
Let's take this to a different spot.
Okay.
I've got a unsafe intersection. And it's built in 1950. And the state has notice of accidents for 30 years. And I'm on the way to the hospital with my one-year-old child in 2008. No cause of action for the injury suffered by my child in the subsequent accident caused by the unsafe intersection because that child wasn't around at the time the intersection was designed and constructed.
No, there's an ongoing duty to maintain, and you can't have a...
My theory is strictly that you build it bad, not a duty to maintain.
Okay. Your Honor, the issue is, I don't know that you can separate that. There has to be there's an ongoing duty.
I think what is giving you trouble and frustrating us is that you're conflating duty and foreseeability.
Let me try again and say, I think most people and most juries would say, yes, it's foreseeable that if the grandchildren are left supervised by an incestuous grandparent, there is a significant risk. But But that's a limitation. The question of foreseeability, unforeseeability, is a limitation on duty. And
correct.
The point I'm making is, so isn't this all about, is there a duty in the first place, and isn't that the only issue we need to address?
Well, I believe the court can decide this case on duty. In fact, I appreciate that because that's where I was trying to go, and I'm sorry I'm not being as clear as I'd like to be. But as the court said, the state Supreme Court in Hunsley said that foreseeability doesn't create a duty, but it's a, quote, further limitation on the right of recovery, end quote, where duty already exists. So, yes, you can stop right at the issue of there not being a duty. Foreseeability, for instance, in the Osborne case.
So why doesn't the statute create a duty that extends to all children?
Because the court has said that it does not. Your Honor, they argue that it is broad, it applies to all children, but the Supreme Court and this court, and I refer first to the Supreme Court in the MW decision, said that it is a narrow exception to the general rule against negligent investigation and applies only in limited situations. And the MW court not only said it was narrow, but it then dismissed a claim that DSHS had itself abused a child while negligently investigating an abuse report, a claim brought by exactly the same type of plaintiffs, children. The plaintiff says here are all part of the class. This court in Yonker correctly rejected the same argument plaintiffs make again, and say there they stated the statutory cause of action does not mean, quote, the state must somehow prevent all child abuse. It says that it does not protect, quote, all children, end quote. That's plaintiff's argument. That's contrary to what this court in Yonker said. It's contrary to what this court in Blackwell said. A review of Washington court holding shows consistency in the determination that under Chapter 26444 RCW, the duty to conduct a reasonable investigation of allegations of child abuse is owed to a particular circumscribed class, children that are alleged to be abused, and their parents. In other words, as the Supreme Court in the Tyner case, and this court again in Rodriguez put it, the statutory claim is limited to those who are, quote, suspected of being abused and their parents. Accordingly, the Supreme Court said just a few months ago in the Frias case that although the statute creates a cause of action, whether a plaintiff is in the class with standing to file suit is a separate inquiry. Our court's consistent description of the protected class as being limited to children previously suspected of being abused results in the conclusion that plaintiffs are not within that class because it is uncontested that these children were not suspected of being abused at the time. They didn't even exist. Now, the conclusion is further supported by analyzing the actual language of the statute, in addition to this court's decisions, in addition to the language used by the Supreme Court repeatedly, as this court said consistently by the authority. The statute's purpose is stated in 2644.010, and that says that the statute, that the state is justified in emergency intervention based upon verified information, and therefore, the Washington State Legislature hereby provides that the reporting of such cases to the appropriate public authorities, in other words, such cases where there is verifiable information, it is the intent of the legislature that, as a result of such cases, of such reports, protective services shall be made available in an effort to prevent further abuses and safeguard the general welfare of such children. In other words, the statute's purpose is of preventing further abuses of such children that were the subject of such reports. And it reinforces the conclusion that if you are not subject of such reports, then there is no liability. The argument that the language of all this authority can be ignored, which is plaintiff's argument, not engaging in that, is unjustified. And Lewis doesn't help plaintiff's case, even though they cite to it. That concerned a child that was previously suspected of being abused by their uncle. And then he continued to molest her after an allegation about her was not investigated. It nowhere implied that police have a duty to those children who are not the subject of a DSHS report. Liability would never end, Your Honor, if that were the case. Also, the case law also has never held that someone can owe a duty to someone who doesn't exist outside the context of prenatal injuries, Your Honors. Also, I would like to address the NK case. It should be made clear that the NK case actually found the Boy Scouts of America not to be liable because they did not have a custodial relationship with the children who existed. The church had a custodial relationship. So there, you look at the issue of foreseeability in the context of the duty as it exists. It doesn't create a duty as was already pointed out. There's also issues here of proximate causation. plaintiffs cite respond to none of our authority on those issues. So, Your Honor, both on the issue of duty and proximate cause, we respectfully request the court to affirm the judgment below. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you. There's an opinion out of 2014, published in 2014, I think it was this court, and it was interpreting and speaking to the issues embodied under RCW 2644-030. I hope it's cited in the briefing, but we might have briefed the issues before that opinion came out. And what was specifically mentioned in that particular opinion was that part of the impetus on the part of the legislature for enacting this statutory scheme was to ensure that there was a financial imperative on the part of mandatory reporters and investigators to protect children. It's a rare occasion where a court like this, or the legislature, actually makes reference to imposing civil liabilities to make sure that there's a motivation for people to take action, but the legislature was willing to do it to protect children. This court was willing to interpret that statutory scheme in that way to say you have a financial incentive.
The context that the legislature's given is here is an allegation, it's not properly investigated, the child's returned to the home or returned to the custody of that person. Nothing in here talks about grandchildren or successive generations. Everything's in the context of the present, stopping abuse. And you alluded to removing more than one child to protect from abuse, obviously. Those children are existents. The risks are immediate. The department is in a position to intervene. The investigation is about the intervention. Here you're talking about incidental effects or collateral effects that are dependent on somebody being born and exposed at a later time and not protected by the parent and other grandparent and the existing CPS report that puts them on notice. That's asking for a duty extension, isn't it, beyond what the statute says in dealing with the here and now?
I think that I have to respectfully disagree with that, and for this reason, is that under the statutory scheme 2644, the duty that Pierce County had and all law enforcement had says right into the statute they had a duty to report back to DSHS. It's right in the statute, and that's the duty that we're most relying upon. Now, when a law enforcement agency has a duty to report back to DSHS the fruits of their investigation, and let's say that this guy got convicted, the only reason that they would have to tell CPS and DSHS about that embodied right in the statute would be to make sure that the button in DSHS gets pushed to say that you don't let that person become a foster parent. And so here
you're not arguing they have a duty to the department. You're arguing they have a duty under the statute, and the statute talks about parents and children.
Correct.
And so you're arguing that children ought to extend to successive generations while they're children.
You know, in this case, I know the struggle, and I understand it, and I embrace it in this case, Your Honor. And here's one of the reasons why I embrace it that everybody seems to want to ignore in this case is that let's take for a second Pierce County's argument. Let's embrace it. If the duty was only owed to the person suspected of being abused, that's Teresa Johnson. She's a named party to this lawsuit. How do you get past that? Under RCW 4.24.
You're also then saying there's an issue of fact as to whether or not that abuse of Patricia, is that the right name?
Teresa, Your Honor.
Teresa, excuse me. Continued after the request for the report was made. Pierce County says that didn't happen. I think you say there's an issue fact as to whether the abuse continued after the date of the report.
Actually, I'm going to tell you very unequivocally, Your Honor, the abuse didn't occur after that for Teresa.
Sorry, I didn't hear you.
The abuse as to her did not occur after that. Okay. I think we conceded that in the briefing, and I don't want to, But there's a duty owed to her, and I'd submit to you under principles of foreseeability and duty, a duty owed to these two girls. But for just a second, assume that just the duty's owed to Teresa Johnson. And going back to just the question you're asking, Judge Leach, under RCW 4.24020, I believe it is, there's a duty to Teresa Johnson, she has an actionable claim if you molest, if her children get molested. The statute the legislature enacted said she can bring a claim for the molestation of her own children. So here we have a little bit of a tongue twister of a legal analysis, but the secondary analysis would go like this, to say that Pierce County can't win on this case, because under Lewis, Judge Applewick's concurring opinion, there's a duty owed to Teresa Johnson. Teresa Johnson, we're not submitting continue to be molested, but under RCW 4.24.020, I believe it is, or it might be 4.22.020, but it's one of the two, she has an actionable claim for the molestation of her children. So even accepting Pierce County's argument, there's legislative support for this.
So your argument is the mother would have a claim for the abuse of her children, even if the children don't have an independent claim?
Yes, Your Honor, and that's clearly embodied. 4.24.020 says a parent has a claim for the molestation of their children. Clear as a bell. I'd submit to you that the analysis that I'd encourage the court to adopt is the analysis that we've laid out and argued most here on the issues of foreseeability in the other context, but in the alternative reasoning, Pierce County hasn't distinguished that secondary argument as well. I would respectfully request that this court reinstate this matter for a jury decision. Thank you.